There is a war of words between the DUP and the Ulster Unionist Party today. Lord MP from the Ulster Unionist Party has said it is hard to understand how any unionist could advocate Arlene Foster's proposed deal with Boris Johnson. He's even dubbed the DUP leader Arlene Two Borders Foster. However, DUP MP Sir Geoffrey Donaldson accused his former party colleague of bitterness and said the DUP had worked with Boris Johnson to secure a reasonable offer. This comes after a DUP U-turn, after they had promised the electorate that under no circumstances would they have any regulatory divergence from the rest of the UK. Now they will. Some people are calling that a border down the Irish Sea. It would mean that Northern Ireland would have to adhere to the regulations consistent with Dublin, consistent with the rest of the EU, and regulations on our products here in Northern Ireland could be different from the rest of the UK. Is that a threat to the constitutional status of Northern Ireland? Well, have a listen. Despite the DUP now agreeing to this, have a listen to what Sammy Wilson said in November 2017.
If there is any hint that in order to placate Dublin and the EU, they're prepared to have Northern Ireland treated differently than the rest of the United Kingdom, then they can't rely on our vote.
Well, yes, they can, because they've now gone back on that. And here's then Arlene Foster, what she said after the DUP had blocked Theresa May's initial deal.
It would be economically catastrophic if we had a border down the Irish Sea.
Now, it's not anymore, according to Arlene Foster. She repeated it again.
There's only one red line in these matters, and that's when we are treated differently from the rest of the United Kingdom in terms of customs, in terms of regulatory alignment.
Have they forgotten that red line? And then again.
That has been our one red line, that we cannot have either a customs border down the Irish Sea or a regulatory border, because that would make us separate from the rest of the United Kingdom. And that doesn't work from a constitutional perspective, and it doesn't work from an economic perspective either.
No, it does work. And just last month, when the Times reported that the DUP was prepared to shift its red lines and drop its objection to regulatory checks in the Irish Sea, the very deal which has now emerged, here's what Sammy Wilson had to say.
First of all, the story is nonsense. It quotes anonymous sources. And any journalism that uses just anonymous sources, you always have to be very sceptical of it anyhow. It doesn't reflect our publicly stated position, and it doesn't reflect the promises that we have made or the way we have voted for the last 3 years. I mean, we're a unionist party. We're not going to vote for any arrangement which makes us different than the rest of the United Kingdom.
Well, the journalism was accurate, and the promises they made, they have now gone back on. Some people would argue this is pragmatic for the DUP, that they're trying to find a solution. Others would argue that they have broken their fundamental promises. We asked the DUP to come on this morning. They don't wish to do so. The Ulster Unionist Party do want to come on. Doug Beattie is with us today. Good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
The bottom line is, does this threaten in any way Northern Ireland's status within the UK?
Well, it probably doesn't immediately, Stephen, but it certainly drives a wedge between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom, and that wedge can only get bigger over the years, and that becomes a constitutional threat. As we align more to Dublin on trade than we align to London, and that's a fundamental problem. But I guess, Stephen, I mean, we have to try and keep this slightly balanced where possible, and people need to understand there is massive frustration out there. For those people who did vote for Leave, who think that their vote has now not been respected, and they just want out of the EU, and they'll be happy to leave with no deal. And many people see that this is a way to put the EU under pressure, that they will not accept this deal, and that the UK can leave with no deal.
And the DUP are trying to be a pragmatic party, prepared to compromise in order to get a deal through on behalf of those people who voted to leave.
Yes, and you could argue that, Stephen. And the problem is this, that the deal that they've come up with is so horrific that it is a danger to us all here in Northern Ireland.
Well, using loaded language. Danger in what way?
Well, we're looking at this constitutionally, as you started the question. We're looking at this through business, and we're looking at this through trade. We're looking at this through how we govern ourselves, and we have to do a vote every 4 years, and that's going to affect the governance here in Northern Ireland, where we were going to be talking Brexit every 4 years in perpetuity. You know, when the rest of Great Britain have walked away from Brexit, we'll still be talking about it in 20 years' time, according to these plans. But let me just read something out to you, and I think sometimes people don't read the explanatory notes, Stephen, so they don't understand the deal, the thing fully. So I'll just read this if I can. And it's paragraph 12 of the explanatory notes, and it says, the zone of regulatory compliance, this is in the island of Ireland, will mean that Northern Ireland will be, in significant sectors of its economy, governed by laws in which it has no say. We will be governed by EU laws in which we will have absolutely no say. That's one of the reasons why we could not enter a backstop, is because we would have no say. Now, it is a backtrack from the DUP, and you could argue that it's being pragmatic, but I think they are taking their voters for granted on this one.
Well, you would say that this is just political point scoring from the Ulster Unionist Party, isn't it?
Well, Stephen, you're right. I would say that, and you're absolutely right, because I'm absolutely 100% opposed to this deal. I think we have to deliver Brexit on behalf of the people, but we cannot just jump into any foolhardy deal purely because the DUP have decided they're going to sign up to that. They promised us that we would leave the EU on the same terms as the whole of the United Kingdom. We are not going to be doing that. They promised us there would be no border down the Irish Sea. There's going to be one. One of the big issues that many people had is that we would not be controlled by the European courts. Northern Ireland will stay under control of the European courts, but will have no say. Now, I can't sign up to that. And if that's one problem, then you go into the problem that every 4 years we have to have a vote on this. That business can't even plan 5 or 6 years in advance. They can do nothing. It is nothing but divisive. And I cannot.
It might be better than a no deal scenario.
Well, that's but you're right, Steve. Well, I'm not even sure in many ways. I think we have to come up with a pragmatic deal, but not this deal. This one is so bad for the people of Northern Ireland and for business of Northern Ireland that we can't sign up to this. We do need to get a deal. But I just do not see how anybody can see how this is a good deal for Northern Ireland in the short, in the medium, or in the long term. And I have tried to get balance, and I am trying to say that the DUP are looking for ways to get round this issue. But the reality is this, that they have absolutely backtracked on all of the things that they said they would not do, they are now intending to do. And I, as a unionist, and unionists out there, could not stand over this. And I accept that the DUP have got a massive mandate. And what I would say to that massive mandate is, you can still support the DUP, but you can challenge them on this. And they should challenge them on this, because this is absolutely a horrendous deal for people of Northern Ireland.
Sam McBride's joining us from the newsletter today. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Stephen.
Newsletter's political editor. There's very little doubt, you know, when we played all of those clips there this morning, this is the DUP going back on what they've said. Or can they say, well, actually, because there is this element in this proposed new deal of nothing happens, essentially without their consent, there's nothing to worry about here?
I think that anybody objectively looking at this and comparing those clips which you played, and there are countless other clips, there are countless other press releases and statements and comments in the House of Commons from DUP MPs as to how they would never accept regulatory border in the Irish Sea or a customs border. What they have done here is got under the customs element of that. That is significant. It is easy to see how that makes it certainly more attractive to the DUP than the backstop. But anybody looking at this can see that it is clear that the DUP have U-turned here in a very significant way. It's just factually indisputable. When you look at the words that came out of Arlene Foster's own mouth, it is beyond doubt that she was saying that what is now happening, or what is proposed to happen, was unacceptable. It was not just unacceptable constitutionally, she said. It was unacceptable in economic terms. She said that would cut us off from our main market. So the lack of any sort of, upfront explanation from the DUP as to why it has compromised this insistence that it is not compromising, while in the very letter which sets out this proposal, it says this is a compromise. I mean, there is just a nonsensical element to this, which I think is potentially quite dangerous for the DUP, because it is, I think, to DUP voters who really care about Leave, who voted for Brexit in many cases, it is potentially trying to treat them as fools, and really gives the impression that they can tell these people whatever they want, they will go along with it because the DUP said I'm not sure that's actually the case with some of these people.
And why should any unionist, Sam, be worried about this? You know, what is the all-Ireland nature of this?
The first thing to say there is that there will be people who will be welcoming this. So there will be people within unionism and elsewhere who will see this. And even if they don't think it's a sufficient movement by the DUP, they will be welcoming this as the DUP backing down from what was a very tough position of saying, we will not accept any Irish Sea barrier between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK when it comes to customs or regulations. And that was making it very difficult to reconcile with the idea that you would have an open border at the Irish border on the land border. So there will be people who will say that is a positive thing and that is a move forward. But I think that the difficulty is that from the DUP's perspective, their own argument until now for more than 2 years has been that if you start to diverge, and Doug Beattie hinted at this, it's not that on day one there is a massive change, but over time, as EU regulations change, first of all, Northern Ireland has no democratic say in that, and therefore there is this argument about it being anti-democratic. Those are the words which the DUP used about the backstop. That element of this clearly has not been solved. I mean, the government's own explanatory note, as Doug has read from, and there are other elements of it which are relevant to this, makes that very, very clear. So that issue is there, and that is a wider principle in the terms of how laws are made, I suppose. But the difficulty, I think, from a unionist point of view, for people who are concerned about this, is that Northern Ireland is going to be less tied to the UK than it is at present. So for a party which is very firmly unionist, which argued that Brexit would make things better for Northern Ireland, it would make us more British, it would make us better economically, it is very difficult to reconcile those arguments before the referendum with the reality of what is on the table here. This is clearly going to make Northern Ireland a little bit more of a place apart.
And Arlene Foster has indicated that she's disappointed in what she described as my media, Sam.
That's right. It was a
and how we're covering this story.
Yeah, well, I mean, she did an interview with the Belfast Telegraph at the weekend, and she gave some more information as to how this would operate. But yes, there was this, and I suppose that there is always a temptation for some politicians that when they're under pressure, and clearly Arlene Foster is under immense pressure here because of the scale and the speed of this U-turn, the fact that people weren't really prepared for it. But there can be a temptation there for them to blame the messenger. But I think that anybody looking at this, you can read the documents. You have played the eclipse of what Arlene Foster said. There is no way to reconcile what she said 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, 6 months ago, 2 years ago. There is no way to reconcile that with what is here without describing it as a U-turn. We would not be doing our jobs if we were pretending that somehow the DUP position hadn't changed. And of course, in the words of the Prime Minister in this letter, he says, this is a compromise. We have moved.
Yeah. Sorry, Sam, to interrupt. It's not just Arlene Foster, to be fair to her, though. Let me remind people, we've played it once. Let's play it again. Here's what Sammy Wilson said in November 2017.
If there is any hint that in order to placate Dublin and the EU, they're prepared to have Northern Ireland treated differently than the rest of the United Kingdom, then they can't rely on our vote.
So it's not just Arlene Foster, Sam, and there will be quite a few unionists who will be saying to themselves, there's no way someone like Sammy Wilson would do anything to threaten the union.
Well, it's certainly not Arlene Foster, it's certainly not just Arlene Foster. I'm drawing attention to her because she is the party leader, and it's her who is leading the course on this. But it is Nigel Dodds, it is Diane Dodds, it is Sammy Wilson. I mean, the list is very, very long because this was the very straightforward party position. And whatever anybody thought about it, some people have liked it, some people have disliked it, but it was very clear. It was the one red line. I mean, there was no real ambiguity around this. And even people who weren't particularly au fait with Northern Ireland politics, it was a very simple message to understand. So rapid nature to this U-turn, which I think makes it very difficult for the DUP to explain, and that really has left this open goal. But I mean, in the terms of speaking of the media, I think the word which she used was the coverage had been ridiculous, that it had been irrational. That is sort of knockabout stuff. It's very easy to throw out a slur like that, if you like. It's much more difficult to engage with what are very reasonable questions as to why has the DUP changed? what will happen if Stormont says no? Will the DUP veto this when it comes to Stormont, or has that position changed? I mean, these are questions which are hanging in the air and
you talk about that. You talk about that veto that, the DUP may or may not have. Of course, that's what we were being told they have. Stephen Barclay, then, the Brexit secretary, says on Mar yesterday, well, they would be prepared to look at that. What does that mean? And then Arlene Foster said, well, this notion of that the Assembly would ultimately have consent, that's now, there seems to be wriggle room in that, because Arlene Foster has said in the absence of an Assembly, it could be a group of MPs. What group of MPs? How many? Where? When?
Well, what Arlene Foster told the Belfast Telegraph in this interview is that she understands that if Stormont isn't up and functioning, this Stormont lock would not be a Stormont lock because there would be no Stormont, so therefore it would go to what she said would be a grand committee of Northern Ireland MPs. Of course, the Northern Ireland MPs who take their seats, 10 of those 11 would be DUP MPs. So therefore, she is basically saying we would have a veto, we would have complete control of this process. However, that's not in the document. That's not written down anywhere. We already, as you say, have got Stephen, we've got the Brexit secretary and other people in the government hinting that even what is being written, what has been written down could be changed at this stage. And I think that really hints at the precarious position that the DUP are in now, and potentially gives us a hint of why they have changed their stance on these things, because it is clear that Dominic Cummings, that Boris Johnson as the Prime Minister, that these people are much less ideologically unionist than perhaps Theresa May was. They are much more enthusiastic about getting Brexit done, whatever that takes, and they have pretty much literally said that. And whether the DUP go along with it or not, they are going to do what they can to get some sort of deal together or leave with no deal. And both of those are potentially very damaging for the union. So I think there is potentially within the DUP a calculation here that while this is a major U-turn, that it's better than the alternative, which could be then being abandoned completely, a Northern Ireland-only backstop, something which would be much more difficult for them to explain at a point where they have been saying and really boasting of their influence on the national stage. And so therefore, they are in a very difficult position. And I think that people, for instance, in the south of Ireland, people in other parties, people who are criticising the DUP for not moving quickly enough, for not moving far enough, they should bear in mind just how difficult this has been for the DUP to even go this far. The idea, for instance, of them conceding on the customs union, I think it's really difficult to see how that could be sold on top of what
happened. Well, might they go there is the next question as these negotiations continue. Of course, the current position from the DUP is they would not, but they said they would never do this. Let's see what we're saying at home this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. Robert. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I would be a DUP voter, and I think they've sold out by when they say that there wouldn't be a border down the Irish Sea and we wouldn't take anything that broke us away from the United Kingdom.
Well, you're calling it selling out. It's called compromise, surely.
Stephen, you tell the voters what you're going to do and the voters vote for you. But that brings me on to the point about the way you started your show this morning was the DUP saying this and UP and they're in a row. And that's what's wrong with unionism. There's too many splits in unionism. And I fear for the country, because all these splits in unionism, we should have one unionist party where the people can get behind, because that's why unionist voters won't go out and vote, because they're sick and tired of fighting with each other. We need one party to stick up for us all.
You say you fear for the country. In what way?
United Ireland. Unionism's too busy fighting with each other instead of sticking together. And Republicans and all's laughing at it. And the way you introduced your programme this morning proves it. And that's why the unionist vote's always down, because people say, I'm not going out to vote for them. All they do is fight with each other. They don't bother representing the community. People's going to community workers in our areas to get things done.
Stay there, Robert. Lyle next. Morning, Lyle.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, the only thing that surprises me is that people are surprised at this U-turn by the DUP.
They would deny it's a U-turn, wouldn't they?
Let's deal with the historical aspect of the DUP. In 1975, I'm going back maybe before your time, Stephen. I apologise if you've been so young. But I remember Bill Craig had agreed with the SDLP, which was endorsed by Ian Paisley, for a voluntary coalition on a Friday. And after the weekend was over, Ian Paisley came back and wrecked it. And the result was a whole lot of people died unnecessarily in Northern Ireland. We then, of course, have Dr. Paisley.
Let's talk about now.
It's all right talking about now, but unless you look at the history of these people, you then don't understand what they're at. And what you understand is that what really was motivating Paisley was money. And the DUP is the same. All they're interested in is money.
Well, obviously, Ian Paisley would say, if he were alive to do so, which he is no longer, so this is rather unfair, he would say that he was politically trying to represent the people who he was elected to do.
Let's go another wee bit. Whenever it came to the Supergrass trial...
Can we talk? I don't want to talk about the Supergrass trial now.
But we don't want to talk about the Supergrass trial.
We want to talk about what's happening present day.
Well, we don't need a whole history of this.
They're doing
the same thing. They're selling out for a very simple reason. Money. That's all they're interested in.
Well, clearly the DUP would reject that totally. And they would say that what they're doing is trying to find a solution to Brexit. The country... The majority of the country voted, the country being the UK, of course, the majority of Northern Ireland voted to remain. The majority of the UK voted to leave, and they're trying to find a way through this. Doug Beattie, to you again, what's the Ulster Unionist Party's solution to this?
Well, you lot would
set up a cross-border body to monitor and regulate trade across the Irish border.
Well, first of all, Steve, let me answer something about people who called for unionist unity. Remember, we, as far as political parties are concerned, we had that. We were all absolutely united in saying no to the backstop. We were united in saying no to the backstop. It was undemocratic. And yet the DUP then, on their own, behind closed doors, changed. They didn't come and consult with other unionist parties. They didn't tell us what they were going to do. They went and did what they wanted to do, which was the interest of the Democratic Unionist Party. And people expect us to just traipse behind them holding their shirt tails. That doesn't happen. They have to give as well, and they didn't.
What's the Ulster Unionist Party solution?
Well, here's the thing, Stephen, and you say something like Lord MP has given proposals and everybody goes, what a load of our nonsense. But if people just sit down and think about it, and what he's trying to do is find a way to counter the backstop. And yes, a cross-border body on trade, the same as what we see through the Belfast Agreement, we'll look at that. And yes, an offence for anybody who is exporting goods which are not EU compliant. And yes, the UK indemnifying that trade. These are things which could counter the backstop. And it was the backstop which was the one single issue we were all dealing with.
Now, hold on a minute. This criminal offence yes. would be what?
Well, this criminal offence would be exporting or moving goods into the EU which are not EU compliant. So that every firm would sign up to a set of rules which say that they would be exporting into the EU with goods that are EU compliant.
And how would anybody ever be caught? Where would the checks be?
Well, there needs to be inspections, Stephen.
Inspections in Northern Ireland?
Well, those inspections could take place wherever that goods are being manufactured to make sure that they are compliant. I mean, that's not difficult.
But if they were being manufactured, for a criminal offence to be proven, you would need to therefore prove the destination. For a criminal offence, you know, you're talking about a high bar to give someone a criminal record. Presumably, in the Ulster Unionist Party strategy, there would have to be checks at the border or at the point at which they're entering the EU.
No, they don't, Stephen.
Why?
Well, I've just explained to you, because those checks can be done. If somebody declares that they are going to export goods to the European Union, those goods can be checked at the point where they are being manufactured.
Well, they wouldn't be so stupid if they weren't EU compliant to say, yes, we're now committing a criminal offence and bringing them across the border. Wouldn't be that stupid. Criminals don't hold their hands up and say, come and arrest me.
Stephen, and you're looking at this purely that individuals and companies would be acting in a criminal manner.
Correct.
Well, listen, some companies who manufacture goods under a set of rules and get it wrong, and they make their goods which are not EU compliant. What we are trying to say to the EU is we will put in active, positive measures to make sure that goods leaving the United Kingdom going to the EU are going to be up to your standards. That's what we're saying.
Okay.
And it would be up to us then to make sure that that is the case.
And how big a staff would you need to be carrying out all of these checks?
Well, Stephen, I don't know, and I'm not going to lie to you, because we haven't sat down and we haven't, with the Irish government or the UK government, been able to sit down and explain this in any depth. or even expanded.
But you would have people, a squad of people walking around, what, every firm that was exporting into the Republic of Ireland, would you?
Well, that could be done on a quarterly basis. That could be done on a half yearly basis to make sure that that firm is compliant. It doesn't have to be, as you say, a squad of people walking about. I mean, that just is ludicrous. What we're talking about is firms which are checked for compliance.
And how's this not a smuggler's charter for those companies and indeed those individuals who want to profit big time and think to themselves, well, the Ulster Unionist Party, they got their way. There would be no checks anywhere on the ground. So we'll say that we're not exporting it to the EU. And as soon as we get into our lorry, there's no checks. Off we go.
Stephen, smuggling is a criminal matter. And as a criminal matter, it must be dealt with by the justice system. And therefore, it is the police's job to look at criminal matters such as smuggling, in the same way it is the Garda Síochána's job to look at smuggling.
They look at it
right now as we speak. They're doing tasks now to counter smuggling on this island and elsewhere.
And this cross-border body,
yes.
What would it do?
It would make sure that those trading arrangements between the EU and the UK are in place. They would monitor them and make sure it happens. And if there is
make
any
sure what issues, happens,
if it, well, make sure that they are moving across and they're compliant. Make sure that anything
how?
What do you mean how?
How would this cross-border body make sure that the goods were compliant?
Well, Stephen, like anybody, like any corporate body that meets and discusses an issue, they come up with an agenda, and in that agenda is any of the issues that they find with the rules and the regulations that they've got, and they then trying to address it. That's a ridiculous question.
Well, it's not a ridiculous question.
It's not a ridiculous question.
Because I'm trying to probe into whether this is just, you know, a headline, and beneath it, has there been much thinking? So you don't know how big the team would be to measure this criminal offence. And then this cross-border body, they would sit and they would talk and make sure things are compliant. When I say how, you come up with this loaded language of it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous
loaded,
question.
It's not loaded language, Stephen. Any cross-border body sits down and discusses any issues that they are finding within the remit of what they've been tasked to do. And when they come up with a problem, they then put in solutions to fix that problem. That's what cross-border bodies do. And that cross-border body could have a number of remits.
Does this stack up, Sam McBride?
I think that one of the difficulties which Doug has said there or has alluded to there, and that Robin Swan was saying this on the Inside Politics on Friday night as well, is that the Ulster Unionist Party have become so small that they are struggling to have their ideas heard. So Lord MP wrote in our newspaper about this. He has put this out there several weeks ago, maybe over a month ago. But it is difficult to get the government to listen. It's difficult to get airtime. And so with the scale of the DUP's mandate, there comes the responsibility, I suppose, to find these solutions for it. Rather than for smaller parties. But I think the difficulty is that nobody is really coming up with something which can guarantee that you can leave the EU in Northern Ireland. You can still have the Republic of Ireland in the EU, not have any infrastructure at the border, not have any infrastructure between Northern Ireland and GB. And I think there is a certain extent to which that conundrum just cannot be solved. If we are in different regimes, you can do all sorts of things that could minimise it, and making this new criminal offence might be one of those, although it could also be seen as a sledgehammer to your crack a nut, because a criminal offence is a very serious thing, and exporting goods in that nature might not be seen as something that meets that bar. But regardless of that, even if you did that, to enforce that, you are going to have significant checks. Some of those might be away from the border, but there is an extent to which it is inescapable that if you have a border and if you have different regimes on either side of that border, the only way to guarantee what is flowing between those two sides of the border, logically, is to have something there that checks them.
Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, Sam McBride, has made it very clear. He said the following: the DUP is absolutely clear that an all-Ireland economic zone with all goods and services exclusively under EU rules and the resulting regulatory border in the Irish Sea is not something we would support. Now, am I right in saying that when Sir Geoffrey says that, you've got to look at the services part? So services would not be exclusively under EU rules, but goods would. But he is saying the DUP is absolutely clear an all-Ireland economic zone with goods and services exclusively under EU rules is not something we would support.
That's correct. So really what the DUP are now trying to do is retrospectively say that they were never opposed to a partial border in the Irish Sea, that actually, as long as something was kept outside that border, some sector somewhere, that would be okay. Of course, that is not what they said. They said in very categoric terms, without caveat, on multiple occasions, we will not accept a regulatory border in the Irish Sea. We will not accept Northern Ireland being treated differently. We will be treated the same as the rest of the UK. However, if you look at what Sir Geoffrey is saying, he is leaving open the possibility for further negotiation, I think, as to the percentage of regulations that Northern Ireland would adopt. So the Prime Minister in the House of Commons last week hinted at the idea that it might be up to 60% of EU regulations that would apply in Northern Ireland. Once you've accepted the principle that it is not a constitutional threat to have that regulatory divergence between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, to have an all-island aspect to this, once you've accepted that, clearly it's much less of an argument as to what percentage of those will be in force here. So I think that is what is being opened up here.
John in Belfast has a question for Doug Beattie.
Doug, just the hypocrisy of you. Said that the DUP are sailed us out, the DUP are sailed us out, but you're not. What about the Ulster Unionist Party, where it says, vote Ulster Unionist Party 1 and the SDLP 2, vote Make and you get Colm, a party whose agenda is a united Ireland?
Well, first of all, they didn't say that. So you can spin that whatever way you want. You need to put that into context, where one person said that he would transfer his vote to the SDLP. One person said that. The party didn't say that.
The Ulster Unionist Party leader.
But the party didn't say that. One person stood up and said that he could transfer his second vote to somebody who was in the SDLP. The party did not say that you should transfer to somebody else.
The point he's making is it was your leader at the time, Mike Nesbitt.
Yes, and he was talking about Mike Nesbitt's vote. He was talking about his vote. Now, for somebody to spin that to say that was party policy...
I don't think you can spin it that it wasn't relevant, that he was the leader of the party at the very top of the party.
I never said it wasn't relevant, Stephen. What I'm saying is he was talking about his vote.
Was he wrong?
His vote. No, it's his vote. He can do what he wants with his vote.
Was he wrong? Would you do it?
No, I wouldn't, no. But that was Mike's vote.
Exactly. That's the Ulster Unionist Party, Stephen. Alfred is an alternative. Vote SDLP. Thank you, Doug. The Ulster Unionist Party...
Well, John, Doug is making it very clear that he would not do it, nor would the majority of the party, is what he's saying. John's away. We'll pause there. We'll say thank you, actually, to Doug and to Sam. Thank you very much indeed.